Okay, so let's get started. This is an experiment. I don't know what's going to happen. This is a psychological social experiment amongst physicists. So it may take us 5 minutes, it may take us an hour and a half, who knows. You should have all received a survey of these somewhat random questions. Unfortunately, David Gross can't be here. He's homesick today. He had actually encouraged us strongly to do this. They've done it at some other programs here, and it's generated a lot of discussion about the status of the field and where the field should go. So that's the basic purpose, to try and generate some sort of discussion. And starting from some of the responses to these questions, to sort of maybe guide and provoke some discussion amongst people to try and see what topics have resonated, what ones maybe have been left out. It's a little unfair because we will have a series of talks tomorrow on things that some people may not be that familiar with. So the idea was also to have some people who are really working on resurgence here as part of a sort of panel, and some people who are somewhat outside of the resurgent community but working in related fields of string theory or field theory or mathematics, who can contribute words of wisdom or words of encouragement or discouragement, as the case may be. So please, you know, speak up, offer opinions, ask questions. I'll start the ball rolling with just flashing some responses to some of the questions. So here are the four questions. We got a reasonable response rate. It's sort of like when you ask at the end of the semester your students to do evaluations, you have to basically bribe them just to respond. So it was a little bit like that. But we got about 28 responses, which, you know, it's not too bad. So just to remind you, these were the questions. What major problems do you think the resurgence program actually has the ability to solve eventually? What things do you think it can solve and contribute to in the short term being 3 to 5 years, just randomly, but short term. The first one could be much longer term goals. Third, what do you think are the main things that we're missing at the moment? What are the obstacles to progressing in different directions? It could be technical, it could be conceptual, it could be computational, it could be just mathematical, physics ideas that are needed. And just collect suggestions of things that are currently puzzling you. This could be, if we bring up some topic that you're puzzled about, there's probably somebody in the room who can at least suggest something, some reference or some comments to guide people to learn more. Because some people here at the conference are not actually actively working on resurgence, but are, say, curious about it. And so this is the time to speak up if you're curious about something. There should be someone in the room who can say something helpful. Okay, so that's... Yeah, so we're also running low on microphones, so I don't quite know how this is going to work logistically, but...
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I thought over these questions when I got the questionnaire. In fact, I thought about them even before, because previously I had done a few works on resurgence, renormal loans, and I have a number of opinions. They need not necessarily coincide with other people's opinions, and so I would be very happy if somebody will speak out against what I'm saying or supplementing what I'm going to say, something like that. So the first thing I want to say is the very scope. I believe that resurgence is a method, and it's extremely good, or can be good, or is already good for making more precise some results and understanding better some results in all problems where where the coupling constant is weak and the quasi-classical methods can be used in order to supplement the standard perturbative expansions and go much further than that. It doesn't have to be some kind of a quantum mechanical problem. It may be, say, for instance, field theory prepared in a way, let's say, Mithat and collaborators did. You put it on R3 times S1, you make it weakly coupled, and then you have lots and lots of quasi-classical field configurations which you input, and you can understand better and increase the accuracy of your theoretical prediction. Then taking, of course, the radius of the compactified dimension to be large, it's a different problem. In general, I don't believe that resurgence will make any progress, will help us make any progress directly in strongly coupled problems where the coupling constant is of order one, all phenomena are highly quantum, and quasi-classical configurations don't mean much. So, but even leaving this aside, I believe that even in field theory, which is closer to me, there are plenty of problems where resurgence can help. Let me give you just one example. For instance, consider QCD-like theory with fermions near the Banks-Zaks point. Near the Banks-Zaks point, you have you have an infrared fixed point and some value of the coupling constant in the IR, and you have at zero, you have ultraviolet fixed point, and the coupling constant never evolves beyond this interval. So it's a weakly coupled problem. Since the coupling constant is always small, there are obviously no renormal ones. And perhaps even most probably there are no condensates. But the question is whether we can give a good definition and improve the perturbative expansion in this particular conformal window. Mm-hmm. And I believe that using quasi-classical methods, it's doable. It has not yet been done, I believe, but I believe it's doable. And it's a very interesting problem by itself. There are a number of other problems of this type. So let's say that's what I think about the future of resurgence in the field theory.
Can I comment on the first question?
Sure.
So I think almost 10 years ago, we started this program of compactifying gauge theory differently on R3 cross S1. As everything in life, it has its pros and its cons, right? Sometimes people criticize it, saying that it is on a circle, but you should see both the good side of the story as well as bad side of the story, right? R3 part is infinite to begin with. This is the good side. For example, I know Marco is laughing there. I don't know the precise reason why, but lattice gauge theory is manifestly formulated on T4, right?
Yeah.
It's manifestly formulated on T4. And you can never take that T4 to infinity. You can only take scaling, okay?
Yeah.
In that sense, it will never be R4, you know, until the end of the universe, okay? So, but on R3 cross S1, okay. Now, I think we have a very precise understanding of more or less any gauge theory on the small circle limit. And in many cases, we believe that in the sense of symmetries, it is continuously connected to R4. Now, the question is whether we can make progress here or not towards approaching to the R4 limits. That's your question. I think there is one possibility that may work, in my opinion, and this was something that maybe Ovidiu can also say something, okay? If there is no phase transition in between, but there is only breaking of the semi-classical approximation as you pointed out, in principle, if we have very good data on semi-classics, for example, both monopole instantons, bions, you know, saddles, which action tree in some units, in the units of monopole instanton action, In principle, if we can accumulate sufficiently good data, we can sum up these exponential factors. And in principle, if there is no phase transition as you go to largest one, and in many cases we can guarantee that there is no phase transition, this summed up data should be some reflection, it should be possible to extrapolate this to large L. I know this is not done, okay, but I do not see a fundamental difficulty preventing this.
Well, since this is not done, it's a matter of gut feelings. I mean, you may feel more positively about this. I feel cautiously, you know, I don't say that miracles happen, but to my mind, although precise quantitative extrapolation will hardly be possible, just because I can give you an example. I can give you a two-point function which is zero to all order and perturbation theory, okay? Zero, 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 no matter how some order by order, you still get zero. But physically, because of the strong coupling effects, it is not zero. And it's very easy. All effects related to spontaneous breaking of the chiral symmetry of this type. You know, you take a two-point function of two vectors minus two-point function of two axials, you get something which is vanishes to any order and perturbation theory. It's zero, 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 zero.
There is no contradiction with what I am saying. For example, in the small circle regime, you know, take super Young Mills, you calculate chiral condensate, and it is the exact result as it is on R4. Right? Nobody has any objection to this. That's a perfect example of my point, you know?
No, I don't want to go into details in supersymmetry. Supersymmetry may help, but let's say, you know it better than me, that let's say these fractional instantons, they produce power corrections which are a little bit off, you know, because the beta function is not exactly 4. If it were exactly 4 and C, then you would get the right, but it's a thirds and C.
No. Look, they come out with the right power. So from the zero mode, you do get beta function coefficient 11 thirds at the place that it is supposed to be because of NSVZ type construction. You know, similar to the calculation that you did long time ago around the instanton background. Even in the monopole background, you do see that 11 thirds. Yes, monopole action happens to be 1 over n of the instanton action. And except for some very special theory, the monopole anti-monopole does not precisely coincide with the renormal on location.
Exactly.
But again, this summation that I am talking about, you know, there may be ways around that. You know, Ovidiu is telling me that maybe he should comment that these summations can change, you know, the location of the singularity,
well,
perhaps. Yeah.
Mikhail, I don't want, just I finish, and then Arkady. I don't want to argue with you. Maybe anything can happen, you know, because in the strong coupling regime, anything can happen. And maybe there are some mitigating circumstances or some help from supersymmetry which will make it happen. I don't deny it. But since so far it has not yet been done, it's just my impression that this would be a stumbling block, okay? That as long as you keep the size of S1 very small,
okay,
it will be improving the accuracy of the precision in an iterative way, you know, better, 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 better. But then, I don't know. I think
maybe we should give right. Alexei wants to microphone.
I
can
I comment about Alexei? He presented this LCDS1, and I then discussed with him you get this hierarchical exponential structure, and you can think how this structure appears. And it looks like, I mean, it's a guess, but it looks like that it appears because you have hierarchy of level, and you have this exponentially small levels, and what you get from the incident, it is a ratio of higher mass to the lower mass. When the lower mass is exponentially small, then you get, you know, another ratio to be exponential, and it is this second exponential that they got there. But it is an example of the epoch which is clearly not related to original instant, because original instant was a ratio of, say, spheroidal mass or mass of W in Higgs regime. Introduction of this circle introduced a new structure for low energy levels. No, there is nothing wrong with that, but it is not the one which has analog in the limit we are interested in. So it interests by itself maybe, but it's example, I believe, Misha, of what...
That's a big question, whether quasi-classical saddle points exhaust all dynamics in at strong coupling, and there are no example where it does. In supersymmetric theories and protected quantities like Zeiber-Quitton prepotential, that's exactly what happens, right? We know that if you sum up all series of saddle points, instantons, then you get the final answer, which is exact and completely exhausted dynamics. But even in the very same theory, try to do this in non-protected sector, and you will see that it's absolutely not the case. There is much more complexity there, and it's hard for me to believe with my experience that saddle points, even being summed up, exhaust the dynamics. Maybe they will, but this is a separate, you know, if this will be explicitly demonstrated, at least somewhere, this will be a very significant breakthrough, but so far I don't see any reasons for it. I don't see the hints for this breakthrough.
So maybe one more comment from Alexei, and then we'll come back on Shell with...
It's very difficult to demonstrate things in non-supersymmetric quantum field theory directly on R4, but there was the original claim is that with just weak coupling data in a quantum system, you cannot get strong coupling information. I don't know about field theory. The jury is out, I think, except for maybe supersymmetric field theory. But in quantum mechanics, I think we've seen many talks where that is in fact what is done, right? Resurgence really does work in quantum mechanics, and you can really take weak coupling data and get all the way as far as you want in the strong coupling region, at least in principle. It may break down in field theory, right? Maybe there's some ghosts lurking in field theory, but It is at least possible in some quantum theories for this to happen. So I just wanted to comment on that.
Okay.
I mean,
okay. Can I proceed or?
Yes.
No.
It's a little bit like what I also would like to speak for quantum mechanics, which is of course a toy model compared to quantum field theory. So what I say may not apply, but. In quantum I don't understand this prerequisite that you make, that resurgence begins to be interesting in regimes where quasi-classical approximation is good enough. I think it's exactly the opposite. In fact, resurgence allows you, as you said exactly, to go much beyond that. For instance, in my personal calculations, I discovered results for h bar equals plus infinity.
Yeah, I completely agree. We know many examples now where
specifying remark. Sir, you know, I was inaccurate. It's not the issue of quantum mechanics versus field theory. The issue is whether or not the expansion goes into a coupling which is fixed, does not run.
Yeah.
When it runs, okay, we don't know when it runs, and you start from a small coupling constant for a range of phenomena, and then it starts running when you go to infrared, and if this running law doesn't stop somewhere, if it leads you towards a domain formally where the coupling constant is infinity, you lose any information of the analytic structure in the complex plane or whatever.
True. That's not true.
Okay, can I express my own opinion? You can express your own opinion, that's substantial. And I would be very much interested to hear at least one example from the field theory with the running coupling constant, which runs into a strong coupling regime. Then its statement becomes substantive. Otherwise, it's all of at the level of hopes. Yeah. Now, very briefly, I'm down to the list.
So, Misha, wait. We're going to do it a different way. Okay.
What's that? I didn't see this.
No, because it just came.
No, I think, please, show so, the previous. I mean,
Misha, Okay, just to take control a little bit, what I'm going to do is run through the answers to the four questions. I edited, I paraphrased, I selected, I take total responsibility for mangling your responses, but I also wanted them to all fit on one page for each question. So here, and already in this discussion we've had for the last 15 minutes, many of these questions and comments came up from not just one person, but from many people. So these are clearly important problems, but let's just run through them so we get an idea, because there are questions coming from the mathematical side, from the field theory side, from the quantum mechanics side. There are a lot of different people here, and I want to open it up to all sorts of aspects of resurgence. So one thing that came up in many cases was whether or not resurgence could be useful for producing, now rigorous means different things to all people in this room, but rigorous, constructive, computationally useful, implementable, whatever adjective you want to use, but some usable definition of the path integral. And in particular, people often emphasize situations where naive Monte Carlo type definitions or lattice type definitions don't work, such as quantum dynamics in strongly coupled systems, non-equilibrium type problems, finite density type problems. And we all understand why that doesn't work, and we all understand that resurgence actually gives a new idea to the problem. Whether it will eventually work or not is one of the questions that many people express. This is where time is a bit of a problem, because we'll have talks about this tomorrow where people have actually implemented these ideas in simpler systems, but progress is being made, and it's only the last year or two that this has been taken seriously. So other issues, generally the name of non-perturbative completion. If you only for some reason have perturbative data, some or lots in certain situations, under what circumstances can you complete, and under what circumstances do you get a unique answer or different answers, and why is that from the physics point of view? There's a more mathematical comment, is the connection problems, which to physicists would mean relating strong coupling to weak coupling. Often there are situations where there are explicit dualities. Those are very interesting to explore, but the physically more interesting case is if for some reason you have weak coupling information and you have some strong coupling information, how are those two things related in the absence of some duality? And then as part of these mathematical systems, there are important technical questions of how you actually calculate Stokes constants if you're away from an integrable system. Can you do it in closed form? Can you do it numerically? What are the actual techniques? And then we have a nice comment that basically the jury is still out. We don't know yet. Thing, you know, it's still moderately recent. It's only maybe 10 years or so that people have used resurgence in the sort of matrix model, string theory, field theory, revived quantum mechanics type analysis, and you know that's a short time scale on the time scale of this field. And so I think there are still many things to be done, and this many people express this sort of reservation that it's probably too early to judge. And I think that's reasonable. Okay, so here's also a comment that, okay, it may offer insight to things that we can maybe solve or study another way, but will it actually be able to solve some really big problem? I mean, you know, it's not clear, and I think it's pretty obvious that that's not clear. And there's an interesting comment here about, you know, it's very often said that WKB works better than it should. Right? We all have a lot of experience with that type of phenomenon, that leading asymptotic expressions are remarkably good for the amount of input you require. And then, you know, there are many cases here where it really works remarkably well. And I think there is something to be understood there, why it works remarkably well. So these were for the sort of big questions, possibly long-term questions. And then responses on the shorter time scale. So several people stressed the fact that many of the examples that have been studied in detail, where resurgence clearly works, and works means either analytically or extremely compelling numerical information, is that very often in these systems there's an underlying integrability. So how important is that? Right, we heard that in many talks, in Andre's talk just now, that once you go to a higher dimensional, you lose the inherent integrability structure of 1D quantum mechanics, and does everything just fall apart, or can you somehow do something? So many people expressed this sort of reservation or comment that this may be a very important feature. So that's both a physics feature and a math feature. And then people were saying, okay, maybe in the shorter term we will make some progress in some, not maybe in field theory, but doing not one-dimensional but finite-dimensional Picard-Lefschetz theory, real-time path integrals, at least in quantum mechanical system, and maybe some progress in higher genus quantum mechanical systems. The questions about there should be some progress, there's lots of activity in the math community about establishing theorems, and maybe now thinking about new types of theorems that have been suggested by physics applications. These, I think, are part of the discussion that we just had about the role of renormalons and in sigma models and in Yang-Mills and compactification methods. Then there are several responses relating to topological strings, relations to matrix models, localizable theories. That ties back in with the comment at the top, but a number of people expressed optimism that progress would be made. In fact, a lot of progress has been made, but that further progress can be made on the shorter time scale in these types of questions. And then some other interesting comments about non-topological saddle points in non-abelian gauge theories. We know the existence of these non-topological saddle points, but very little has known about them. There's been very little mathematical progress other than existence proofs, and their physics role is completely mysterious at this point. And there were a few comments about applications to black hole physics. So that was the shorter time scale. The third question was, what do you think are the current big obstacles? And we also heard something about that in the discussion we just had. So there's clearly a combination of physics and math floating around here, and that's one of the themes of this program and conference, was to bring together physicists and mathematicians. And so here was a comment saying that maybe physical insight and input will be required to actually resolve some of these issues. It may be that there are multiple answers from the math side, and we'll have to provide some physics input to create a non-perturbative completion that makes sense. Some people expressed reservations that rigorous proofs are either lacking or prohibitively difficult, maybe prohibitively difficult for physicists. So it was very nice that Ovidiu gave his sort of summary today about what is really rigorously known from the math side, and I hope that there will be follow-up questions about that in the discussion now. And many people in one way or another expressed the comment that, okay, we know a lot about finite dimensional systems, but as soon as you go to infinite dimensional systems, the theorems disappear into a mist, and we're in the realm of experimental mathematics and testing various models from the theory side, which I don't think that's a bad mode, but if you want rigorous theorems, you may have to wait a while. That doesn't mean there's not progress. And then another comment about the different math perspective and physics perspective that I think I agree with deep down, that you know, I've invested a lot of time in the last few years to try and learn what is really known from the math side, and even if I can't penetrate all of the deep, rigorous theorems, it really helps to guide you about what might and might not be possible from the physics side. And I think it's starting to go in the other direction, that some of the physics questions, for example, that Ricardo and Ines and Marcel have uncovered in these matrix models and these integral systems have really suggested new ideas for mathematicians, new things that I think weren't necessarily thought of before as things to be studied and to be proven. So I think it's a two-way street, but many people mentioned that this is clearly a problem, which I think is sort of, in the end, maybe obvious.
Not only in research,
of course. It's a universal problem. Okay, and what things are you puzzled about? So these were sort of fun answers. So 2D, 3D, 4D, and as soon as you go away from non-supersymmetric theories, clearly this is an important question, and I think this will be something that will be addressed certainly on a case-by-case basis to start with until we develop a more complete picture. And then again, this infinite dimensional systems, I agree that I think there's something very deep here. It may be limited, what we can learn and what we can do, but it's clearly a very deep question. It's not superficial. So basically, it means that any information is useful information. And then another question about what is actually known, what can we confidently accept as possible, and what can we regard as really conjectural and experimental. Parametric resurgence, so David talked about this today. This is clearly an important question where you don't just have one expansion parameter, there are some other parameters floating around, which might be masses or temperature or density or something like that. And you know, that's even less developed mathematically because it's much harder, but it's quite relevant for physics. So this is, okay, a number of people talked about these iterated exponentials. I can say something about that actually, but it was quite amusing to read that some people were honestly confused about that. I especially liked this response. And then this is, I think, a repeat of one of the responses on the first question, the longer-term question. You know, really deciding what observable is the right observable to study, because you could be in the situation where the evidence of resurgence is much easier to study in one observable rather than another. And we heard that this very nice example, even in this matrix model and planar-based systems, where making this relatively innocent change from focusing on free energy to focusing on the partition function, which from the math side is basically an elementary step, actually revealed some very interesting physics structure related to these Liang zeros that was much more hidden just by changing the observable. And I think there's a moral there somewhere that we really need to input some physics, in that case related to phase transitions, to really bring these, tease these problems apart. And so I think that's my interpretation of this. Almost finished. I didn't write this. I don't know who did. It's a totally anonymous survey. But again, why does it work better than it should? So to maybe end on an optimistic note. So that's just to give you a flavor of the range of answers and comments. I think there was a lot of repetition, and so I just selected to give sort of representative comments. There are obvious themes related to field theory or string theory or matrix models or quantum mechanics or supersymmetry or not supersymmetry. So having said that, and now that we see some perspective of who we are and what we are and what we think, maybe I can start by asking some of the people up here to make a few comments, and then we'll open it up again for comments. So maybe, Avidya, would you like to expand a little bit on what you talked about today? And
right, so one thing that I said this morning is, I think, under very good control are finite dimensional problems. So we have not, in analysis so far, encountered these infinite dimensional problems, and they may be challenging. So I have in mind...
Hold it a bit closer.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you could also move closer. Okay.
So
Just kidding.
By finite dimensional, I mean all these PDs, multidimensional integrals, all these objects. Their resurgence is very well understood. Maybe I should also comment on your comment of sorts. In a sense, resurgence is a generalization of analyticity. So if you have the information of on an analytic function at the origin, in principle, you know it everywhere. Resurgence, in a sense, is more powerful than that. So a divergent series contains more information than a convergent series. And we have tools which are better than the usual sort of analytic continuation to carry this information globally in the complex domain of the solution. And that's one of the main applications of resurgence in math. So these are the problems that we could solve through resurgence, and they have no analog with usual math. So you get a global representation of your function. And particularly this kind of connections, the equivalent of small coupling to large coupling. So these are quite accessible in the set of problems that we understand.
So can I also pitch in here that a number of people raised comments that are there things that resurgence can do that no other techniques can do, which is a very valid question. Or is it just a reinterpretation or re-understanding or deeper understanding of something that we can solve with other methods? And so maybe a question to you, Avidya, is you mentioned already some problems that for which there are no other methods.
Right. I mean, so is this power to represent functions globally that gave access to a number of problems that were not it's very hard to say that there can be no other methods, an absurd statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to the,
so far.
To date, there is nothing else. So the classes of problems where we started working in maybe 10, 20 years back, and to date, all solutions are through resurgence. And some of them are stability problems when you have, the linear stability is governed by a non-self-adjoint operator based on a potential on which you have no grip, except sort of almost qualitative. And the general technique that we developed to deal with this kind of problems is that through resurgence methods, you can obtain global representations of the potential which are as good as almost as you would have them in closed form. Then you can take that information, put it in the Schrodinger equation, and repeat, use resurgence in order to solve the connection problem, and then you can say what the spectrum is and what that. So for the end.
So, Andre.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I don't understand too well the remark one, the one before the last. I think it's too restrictive. How powerful resurgence actually is. Why does it, to demonstrate its power, why does it have the only, to have to be the only method that does it? If it can do it in the first place, or fast, quicker, then it doesn't matter if then somebody comes with a perhaps better method later, but it has served its purpose.
Sure. I'm reporting, there's a disclaimer here. I'm reporting the response. But this was a common sentiment from some people. So, Marcos, do you want to?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment that, what does it mean, right, to that resurgence is the only method to do something? I mean, in a sense, that's what I was advancing, this idea of semi-classical decoding. I mean, sometimes you have an answer, but the answer doesn't have the information that you want say, for example, in geometric or in semi-classical language. So for example, in string theory, we have many non-perturbative definitions of string theory using these theories, but we don't know what is the space-time meaning of this information in terms of string degrees of freedom or membrane degrees of freedom. And I think resurgence is going to be crucial to decode ADS-EFT correspondence in actually a geometric language in terms of string, gravitational, and membrane or D-brain degrees of freedom. And you have the answer from the Gauss theory. You can say that you already have the answer, but that's not the answer in a language that you want to use. You want to use it you want to decode this answer in a semi-classical or space-time language.
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Do you want to make some comments, Ashok?
Yeah. Maybe I can elaborate on that. I mean, not all string theories have non-perturbative definition, right? There are some string theory in flat space which have no non-perturbative definition, and you know only perturbation theory. But so in this context, my question is the following. So let's consider the case where the coupling doesn't run, so that the Mises problem doesn't arise. Okay, that you have a marginal deformation, so there is a coupling constant. In many string theories, you know not just the weak coupling expansion, but also the strong coupling expansion. In principle, you can compute to all orders. And the question that I would like to ask is, can it help? I mean, resurgence normally uses only the expansion from one side. I have not seen any attempt to combine information from strong and weak coupling with resurgence. So can it help?
So we're currently working on this project, and the answer is yes.
Yes. I see.
Yes.
I can provide some examples.
Yeah.
I see, okay.
And again, it falls into this last category. It works better than it should. So, and in this, techniques of resurgence were absolutely crucial. So,
I mean, for instance, we are using the toy model, if you will, the Penalty equation P1, and from the asymptotic expansion at infinity, we can get the Taylor series at zero.
I see.
And with very high accuracy.
Whatever precision you want, basically. So this the many, but P1 is the most explicit, so.
Yeah, that's because we know so many things about P1 and we can quickly check whether.
But the method's universal, so. Maybe anyone, Carl, you wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, if I were the head of some funding agency trying to decide on whether or not I wanted to provide more money for resurgence, I would definitely say yes. And the reason is that it seems to be young, and it's at a stage where there are a lot of new results coming out very rapidly, okay? And you don't know where it's gonna go, and you don't know whether or not it's gonna fade away in 10 years, but I would certainly provide funding now. I would say my own view is that, you know, I love asymptotics, and when I'm teaching asymptotics to students, what I say is that the reason why you should take this course is that until now you've had the wrong approach. And the wrong approach is that you're trying to write the answer equals this. And you can't do that because you can't solve problems. You can never do that. And the question is, what is the problem there? The problem is the equal sign. And if you replace the equal sign by an asymptotic sign, now on the right-hand side of the relation, you can write something. And in fact, you can write something that's arbitrarily accurate, okay? And resurgence evidently makes it even more accurate. So this is very impressive, okay? The question is, can we find out all the information about the answer to a problem by doing resurgence? It seems to me, however, that the problems are, first of all, that most of the results are confined to one-dimensional systems or systems with one degree of freedom, ordinary differential equations, one-dimensional, you know, quantum mechanics, things like that. It would be really great even to go to several dimensions, and going from several degrees of freedom to an infinite number of degrees of freedom is very, very, very non-trivial. It's obviously non-trivial. I mean, lattice theory has had a tremendous amount of progress, but partly because you reduce an infinite degree of freedom system to a finite number of degrees of freedom, and you solve that system.
So there'll be a number of talks tomorrow about implementations in lattice.
Yeah, so it seems to me that if I were trying to push in some direction, I would go in the direction of what Andre was talking about this morning. The question is, can we extend just from one-dimensional systems and get a deeper understanding of multi-dimensional systems and so on? That seems to me to be, you know, going to an infinite-dimensional system may be very, very, very hard, but we'll see.
Okay. But finite-dimensional systems are already well understood, such as PDEs.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Even knowing that PDEs.
But there are many quantum field theories in which this formalism provides great insight. These are systems with infinitely many degrees of freedom. I don't think, yes, it is not as precise as it is in a non-narrow DE or, you know, PDE, but still. There are examples in which, for example, up to 2 years ago, we thought that there were no saddles, interesting saddles, and now these are non-trivial two-dimensional quantum field theories. And so now we know that there is an infinite class of saddles. And I think in this sense, and we also do know what the dynamical role those infinite class of saddles play. So, but as I said, I mean, these systems are very difficult because of the issues that Misha is bringing up and other people bringing up. You know, we do not have extremely good information about, say, details of the perturbation theory, but whatever we do is sufficient to extract at least the existence of a vast class of interesting saddles.
But let's say, like, if you see like theory, there is no perturbation theory.
Speak, please, mm-hmm. in the microphone.
Yeah, there is no, I mean, example where Misha said, you have say,
put it closer.
Like theory.
yeah, you have
there, you know, parameter lambda, and that's it, right? So in this way, when you are saying perturbation theory, non-perturbation theory, it doesn't apply. Even because this notion doesn't exist, so in this way you should go a little bit beyond this, right?
Well, Arkady, people are trying.
No, I mean that the terminology doesn't reflect the absence of perturbations here.
Right, but you can ask questions about large N. Right, there are well-defined questions, and
right. But when a surgeon is formulating in the terminology that, you know, you have relation between perturbation theory is S-band, it's not applied.
No, but that's one aspect of resurgence.
Yeah.
That's
okay. Interesting. No, just shows an example. And let me mention another example which related to field theory. For example, we dealt with this QCD sum rules, for example, right? When QCD sum rules, it was say you have correlator, and for correlator, you can write in coordinate space, but correlator Fourier transform. So for correlator is Fourier transform, you know that it's an analytic function, and you can write dispersion relation. Okay, so you have dispersion relation for correlator, which is the integral, or, you know, containing this, say, S minus S tilde, whatever integral over S tilde, right? So let's apply this, inverse Borel or Laplace transformation to this. Then the pole in dispersion relation becomes an exponent, right?
Yeah.
So, so in this way, Laplace transform of your correlator is defined by this integral, you know, but it means that the correlator itself in Fourier transform plays the same role as Borel transform,
yeah.
And you are going back to something else, and we know that correlator, say, in X space would contain exponent, right? Yeah. I mean, in this sense. In field theory, your objects like correlating in Fourier transform, they already, if you like Borel transform, because they do not have exponents themselves. They are kind of closer to poles or combination of poles, whatever. It's of course not about coupling constant, it's about dependence on momenta there. But still, I think that it's still interesting. Object to consider, you know, in this respect, not only as a function of coupling constant, but as a function of kinematical variables.
Sure. Yeah. I think everybody would agree.
That's your expansion parameter.
Yeah.
That's your expansion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I maybe I would like to comment a little bit more on string theory.
Sure.
because you can always use QCD as a weapon of mass destruction against any attempt. But I think in string theory, you know, resurgence has been really a success story. And I think there are also kind of problems which are not so incredibly difficult, but they are also interesting, in particular in the connection with mathematics, because we are talking about mathematics more focused on the techniques of resurgence and so on. But I think one direction which is very important is the connection between resurgence and geometry, because many of the functions that we are looking at, like Panleve 1, for example, have geometric meaning. We know that Panleve 1 controls intersection theory in the modular space of Riemann surface and so on. And I think geometers are going to be very surprised and, you know, positively shocked when you show them that there is all this structure of transseries behind combinatorial quantities that they have been looking at. And the main question is, what are all these objects, you know, what are these objects counting, what are these objects relating to, what is the geometric content of all these objects? And I think this is a reasonable problem in the sense that, you know, it's not incredibly difficult, like applications to the Amir theorem and so on, but would have an enormous mathematical impact, because it would really change the way in which people doing combinatorics, geometry, enumerative geometry will think about their field. And I think this is really a direction which it's very, very important, and also physically is related to this problem of how you decode exact answers in string theory in terms of space-time objects, membranes, deep brain. We don't know how to do deep brain calculus, for example. And the only way we have in order to actually have a concrete access to deep brain calculus is to combine exact results, for example, coming from localization, and resurgent decoding of these exact results. That's maybe one of the few ways in which we can actually access this important problem in string theory.
And you think that's in the sort of short-term doable?
I think this is doable. I think this is doable. It's just hard, but it's doable.
There has been but there's been a lot of progress recently. So,
I mean, I wouldn't. 10 years ago, if you tell me that we can compute the string topological string partition function exactly as a number, I wouldn't believe it. And now we can. We can do really precision calculations in topological string theory, which were completely unexpected 10 years ago. Yeah.
Anybody else want to? Yeah, Karen. Pass it to Lana.
All right, I'll pass it over there when I'm done, because there was another question over there. So I had two comments. I wanted to follow up as a good timing on yours. You were asking what the geometric meaning is, but when you were actually asking it, you were twice asking what the combinatorial meaning is. And I think I would like to know that. And in particular, you know, I'm used to whenever I see a formal power series, at least of it as rational coefficients, I want to think of it as counting something. And now I've got a whole new family of things that should count things and all the basic operations. Like if I take a derivative of a formal power series, I want to think of that as rooting some kind of combinatorial object, right? And now I've got a whole bunch more series, kinds of series and a whole bunch more kinds of operations. And I would really like to know what they mean at that level combinatorially as well. And now here's something. So when you sent out this survey, you asked us to say things that were absolutely outrageous. And but these are not sounding very outrageous to me. They all look fairly well thought out. And I didn't think of this at the time, but I'm going to say something absolutely outrageous, and I'm not saying that I necessarily believe this. But here's a thought. So there's issues with the underlying foundations of quantum field theory, of setting it up truly rigorously. So how about this? Let's just rigorously set up perturbation theory and then use resurgence to the rigorous theory of resurgence to give a rigorous theory of all of quantum field theory.
Yes.
Yeah, well, all the better for them. Then you're already done that.
But, you know, I think Larry.
My answer to Karen, you are very young. Which is very good. Which is very good. But you don't know that, you know, since after the Second World War, there was such a direction, such a direction. This is before my birth, so don't mind. There was a direction in field theory called axiomatic field theory, and hundreds of people disappeared in this black hole. Once they went there, they never returned, and the outcome was close to zero. Okay, there is no such a thing as rigorous proof of the field theory. It's not something which you can rigorously construct, it's always there. Yeah,
that's a little too strong, Misha.
You should get a phase transition.
Yes. There are always some loose ends, you know. Even Feynman mentioned it, that this is a beauty, this is a bad thing, and this is a beauty of it. It cannot be just
okay.
Formal. That particular construction, like a Wilson construction, you are defining system in limited sense, and then trying to do.
Okay, you can put it in a lattice. You can put it in a lattice. It's a well-defined construction, except it involves a finite number of degrees of freedom with broken Lorentz invariants. And then all these complexities which you put under the rug, they are in a limiting procedure from the finite to infinite number degrees of freedom to restoring all symmetries of the continuous theory.
Okay, so these are, wait, Larry wanted to say something. So.
Yeah, I was hoping to sort of sharpen up some of the earlier comments from Misha and Arkady that are specific to QCD or QCD-like theories. But something we've already seen is the issue of what you're choosing as an expansion parameter. And in the context of QCD, I just wanted to highlight that there are very different choices. In the continuum theory, say on R4, one class of questions concerns asymptotically high momentum behavior, right? What is the correct asymptotics and correlators at arbitrarily large Q? This is the same as talking about expansions in the usual running coupling. And we know that the large order behavior corresponds to singularities in the Borel plane whose position depends on the fermionic matter content of the theory. And this is a huge puzzle in terms of connecting with semi-classical ideas and identifying a semi-classical saddle. So, I mean, this problem is not new. I'd be very interested if there is any new thoughts or any progress, but to me that looks very hard. In contrast, one can do something like Mitat and Alexei talked about of compactifying the theory, introducing an infrared scale by hand, and for some subset of physical quantities, it then may make perfect sense to expand in powers of a coupling constant on that IR scale. There I could easily believe that this whole resurgence program could work well. The third thing I wanted to mention, though, which I'm particularly puzzled about, is expansions in 1 over n, which has lots of curious features, right? N intrinsically is an integer. Right, there is only a unitary, physically sensible theory for integer values of n, except clearly that's things behave nicely and one can do asymptotic expansions in 1 over n. But can one really go beyond that? There are issues about even how do you define a unique continuation away from integer n, which amounts to saying what's the definition of the theory that doesn't have essential singularities at n equals infinity. Can resurgence really tell us something about exponentially small corrections in that 1 over n expansion? This to me is a really intriguing idea where I don't have any good sense of what progress can be made, but I'd be delighted if it could.
So I think a lot of progress has been made recently, particularly in the context of matrix models.
But also in supersymmetry. Also ABA in theory, for example, yeah. Is a theory for which we know the full 1 over n expansion. Now, for ABA in theory, we know the full 1 over n expansion of the partition function on the 3 sphere, and we know all the non-perturbative corrections in e to the minus n, the whole thing.
Now I am biased by wanting non-abelian gauge theories.
But this is a non-abelian gauge theory. ABA in theory is gauge group SUN. So. It's supersymmetric, but
yeah,
of course. But you know, yeah. It's still I think it's the only non-trivial quantum theory for which you know the full 1 over n expansion plus non-perturbative corrections. Sorry. Like for example. With the non-perturbative corrections? Yeah, well, for the S4, yeah. But you have to do the integral first, right?
Yeah. Well, and you mean very specific quantities. I mean, I can ask you about some other correlator where you don't have such control.
Yeah, that's of course, you can always, but what we were saying is that there was some example where this was done. There has been some examples like this.
Hold on, Zohar. Zohar, do you want to make it? Okay.
I can answer the previous question on a purely mathematical ground. The fact that n is an integer is absolutely not a problem. It's called Fourier series. So instead of doing a Fourier transformation, you would make the Fourier series. And then you can study the analytical analyticity properties of the Fourier sum.
There are two continuations.
I want to make Gerald a comment about Karen's remark.
Please.
So also connecting to what Larry said. So first I want to say something historical. One reason, for example, to Hooft sort of stopped working on QCD or QCD type gauge theories was because he discovered this what he called IR renormal on ambiguity in perturbation theory, and it was very hard to understand. Time proved that it was very hard to understand that these in terms of saddles, in terms of semi-classical saddles. Maybe impossible sometimes, I don't know. Maybe possible, maybe. But at least the thing that Larry was raising, so one can see how things, also it's related to what Arkady said. So it can connect it to condensates, for example. These ambiguities, how the divergence occur, and that's one path. But the other path that we have taken was to compactify these theories, and in that case, there are now quantum field theories, asymptotically free, non-trivial, which has instant tones, so and so, where we know the existence of saddles exactly at the location of the renormal ones. What does this mean? You know, if you assume that perturbation theory is, well-defined, you can do perturbation theory, you are doing, some integral around Gaussian point, and it will have these pathologies, it will have these ambiguities. But at least in these theories, in the semi-classical domain, there is sometimes quite a bit of evidence that we can define these theories non-perturbatively in continuum, okay? At least in the compactified theories. I think this is better than nothing, so it is not the whole story, we realize this, but it is better than nothing. The other addition that I want to make, again, I think that we should really, in US there is this saying that there are two things certain in life, taxes and debt, right? In quantum field theory, in continuum, I think there are two things for sure that we should absolutely trust whenever in the appropriate regime. One of them is semi-classics, the other is Hooft anomalies, okay? So for me, that's like that. And my feeling is that one can take benefit from the other. Semi-classics can benefit anomalies, anomalies can benefit to semi-classics. In this sense, there may even be a potential, to extrapolate some of these conclusions to the strong coupling, but I do not know which ones yet.
I want to add, it's great idea to compactify one direction, but we know other examples, how people make a weakly coupled theory out of Young Mills. You just Higgs it, make all gauge bosons heavier, the vacuum expectation value is larger than lambda, then you get rid of all the normal ones. Instantons and similar configurations are easily identifiable as well-defined saddle points. And in principle, in such theories, you should be able to do everything, right? There is no theoretical mystery in these theories, at least in principle. In practice, it may be still very hard because, I mean, we know few orders in perturbation theory, sometimes we know asymptotics, but we definitely, even in this class of theories, we don't know to any precision all sets of amplitudes, right?
Agree.
No, but we know also exactly Witten, right?
Huh?
No, there is example of Zeiberg-Witten.
Zeiberg-Witten is special, and even in Zeiberg-Witten, they're also extremely smart. They only calculated exactly the protected sector. If yes. If beyond BPS multiplets, what is known? Nothing.
Just a simple comment. So I think there are a lot of information concerning resurgence in holomorphic quantum mechanics. And for instance, there are some objects there which are not well understood. And for instance, even at classical level, you can introduce prepotential, which is discussed here a lot. And its interpretation, it's still puzzling a bit. So another point which I would like to mention is that certainly there should be a relation with the resurgence stuff, with the node homologies. Once again, it's related to holomorphic integral dynamical system, first of all. And on the other hand, there is a one-to-one correspondence between instantons. There are some relation between instantons in four dimension and node invariants. And it's clearly it's clear where it comes from. So certainly there should be relation with the stuff. And on the other hand, there should be relation with entangled entropy, which is another part of the story related to prepotential.
Peter?
Yeah, I want to continue on Sasha's development. So I've been talking to various people at the program about the role of holomorphic integrable systems in understanding resurgence. And so it's definitely a successful example of a successful application of something that we know for to computing various.
My wife.
So we know that the sort of things work well for integrable models in one dimension, also in higher dimensions. But I guess we can ask the question: how specific? Like, what is the specificity of integrability in application to resurgence? In other way, if I take say many-body Hamiltonian and then I go away from integrable point, like how much worse does the situation become? So somebody gave a talk at a conference, I forgot who, and I think it was a question that if the Borel plane for integrable system and non-integrable system is different, then the answer was that it was not that different. So in a way, integrability is through this power of holomorphy. It provides a nice tool to do the computations, but in a sense, it's an additional structure that the model has. I mean, so we can still use it to study the resurgence, although, so before I thought the holomorphy almost implies the resurgence for this quantum mechanical systems, but now I start to doubt that. So maybe it's just additional structure, which allows us, you know, to do the computations, and within this class of models, we can understand the resurgence better.
Yeah, this comment was raised by a number of people.
Right. So in our experience, which is mathematical, integrability plays no role in the study of resurgence proper. So it doesn't help. It doesn't hinder. If you have integrability, that allows you with resurgence to calculate more things.
That's right.
But the Borel plane of an integrable model, like a Perlevé equation, is indistinguishable from a non-integrable equation of the same order.